100.3 WRNB Media Philadelphia. It's old school 100.3. Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-263-1003. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now, here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Hey, hey, good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman and this is Court Radio. It is, what is today? I think it's the 21st of July, where it's a bit humid outside, folks, and it looks like rain is still threatening, but I can see that the air is cooling down, so it should be a nice day, hopefully, if you can dodge the raindrops. The Fightin' Phils went down yesterday by a run, and they really destroyed the Mets on Friday night. You know, normally we're joined in the studio by my friend and co-host, David M. Rappaport, but today, David's going bye-bye, and we have our special host, our special guest host, the one and only Charles Murarkey. Yeah. We don't play around here, sir. How are you, CP?
Good, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for coming on board today to fill in for David.
It's my pleasure.
So we got some stories to talk about, but before we get to those stories, I think we should lead the show by hearing from our president on some of the recent developments at the in Florida.
I know that there's been commentary about the fact that the stand your ground laws in Florida were not used as a defense in the case. On the other hand, if we're sending a message as a society in our communities that someone who is armed potentially has the right to use those firearms, even if there's a way for them to exit from a situation, is that really going to be contributing to the kind of peace and security and order that we'd like to see? And for those who resist that idea that we should think about something like these Stand Your Ground laws, I just ask people to consider, if Trayvon Martin was of age and armed, could he have stood his ground on that sidewalk? And do we actually think that he would have been justified in shooting Mr. Zimmerman, who had followed him in a car, because he felt threatened?
Okay. Well, the president focused on the Stand Your Ground laws and not on the jury's verdict. Folks, you got questions. CP and I have answers. You want to comment on Trayvon Martin or anything else we talk about today? Give us a call at 215-263-1003. That's right. You can get us in the studio. Your legal questions will be answered. 215-263-1003. Give us a call. We'll give it our best shot. So the president focused primarily on the Stand Your Ground law and avoided the jury's verdict. I think that was wise of him. I don't think it's his place at this point to comment, especially in light of the fact that the Department of Justice may be pursuing George Zimmerman for civil rights violations. What do you think?
I think it's still up in the air. What do you think?
I think that it's still up in the air. I think, though, that it begins to sound like they're going to try and litigate good behavior. George Zimmerman is not a public official. He is not one who I think that they have established that he acted on a racial motivation. So I'm not so certain that that's going to prove any better an outcome. And the last thing I want to see is another affirmation of Zimmerman's behavior that day. My concern was and always has been that he was told to back down and he ignored that warning. He wasn't supposed to have a gun. He violated that rule of the town watch. And it was his behavior, I think, that ultimately led to the outcome. Obviously, the jury, six women, made a decision that the prosecutor didn't prove their case. And maybe they also made a decision that George Zimmerman was acting in self-defense. But I know this, the Stand Your Ground law wasn't used in that trial. But I thought then, and I think now, that it's a dangerous expansion of the right of self-defense.
I think one of the things that they want to try to do is bring attention to that law, and maybe the civil rights case, if it comes about, will bring attention to the point where it may be repealed.
Well, it's possible. 215-263-1003 gets into the studio. 215-263-1003, where Sleepy Kyle's got the board under control. I would say that the Stand Your Ground law, it allows somebody to really to enter into fatal behavior when there's a less fatal method of extricating oneself. George Zimmerman didn't need to engage Trayvon Martin that night. He had a car, and Trayvon Martin didn't. George could have backed away at any moment or not engaged him in the first instance. And if the Stand Your Ground law wasn't the law, maybe he would have chosen another alternative. But maybe that law emboldened him because it doesn't take much to prove that, you know, you were standing your ground. It's giving kind of carte blanche to somebody who wants to engage somebody and then pull a weapon out.
In Pennsylvania, before, when I used to be a defense attorney, you had the duty to retreat and find another way to not engage someone. And only as a matter of a last resort, if your life was threatened and you had no way out, then you were allowed to use that kind of force.
Exactly. And that, unfortunately, is not the law in Florida and many other jurisdictions that have embraced this Stand Your Ground law. No longer have to retreat. You know, the only place you didn't have to retreat was your home. If somebody would penetrate your castle, then you had no duty to retreat. They now move the castle to wherever your feet are planted in states like Florida. And it really is makes for a much more dangerous world to live in. And not, like the president said, I have to agree with him, not the kind of place that I'd want to be in. Folks, we are touching upon the Trayvon Martin prosecution still, but we're going to move on and talk about some other things as well. And again, any comments you'd like to make, please jump in at any time. Lines are lighting up, so if you've got questions, we have answers. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Bill from Glenside on the Zimmerman case. Hey, Bill, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your comment?
I got something to say that it probably hasn't been said, but we don't know what happened when George Zimmerman defied the order of the 911 operator and carried a gun when he wasn't supposed to. We don't know what happened when he approached Trayvon Martin. It's not illegal to get out of your car and approach someone. But any reasonable person, if he does get approached by the security, police, or town watch, respect whatever he has to say. And if he says to him, I don't want you to leave, his police are on the way, you know, there's no way you or I would never attack someone simply because he approached us with any type of order. We're going to wait for the police to arrive. Let's say that that's what happened. I think that George Zimmerman shot and killed this kid because he's a police buff, a cop wannabe. I was on the police department for many years, and he wanted to be a cop, and he went above and beyond what he was, but he's town watch. That's what it says, town watch, not security, uniform security, not police. He shouldn't approach them, but he did. But what was Trayvon's reaction? It may have caused a scuffle. It may not. I don't know. I wasn't there. But if Trayvon did throw the first punch, then that changed the whole topic of the situation.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned this idea that he's a town watch guy and a wannabe police officer. What came to my mind at that moment was like volunteer firemen who set fires so that they can be heroes. They maybe hope that and believe that nothing bad is going to happen. There'll be a little property damage, but they're going to save the day. George Zimmerman may not have walked into that scenario with murder in his mind, but he was extremely negligent for having disregarded, the 911 operator, for having carried a weapon in the first instance, in violation of the town watch rules. And unfortunately, as I said last week, and I'll say again, this could have gone differently if the prosecutor had only charged him with in addition to the charges that ultimately came with negligent homicide, because clearly I think that would have been the easier burden to have met, and probably the more realistic, scenario.
Well, in response to the volunteer firefighters trained. They go through a specific amount of training that volunteer job. Town watch don't go through any training. They go through some set amount where a cop gives a speech and tells them what you want not to do. They don't go into any official training.
Yes, but the scenario I painted had nothing to do with their training. It had to do with the errant volunteer firefighter, not the normal one, who's right there to start fires so that he can be a hero, like perhaps Zimmerman in how he wanted to be a police officer. All right, Bill, thanks for calling us from Glenside, and have a great day.
You too.
All right, let's talk to Judy from Center City. Oh, Judy?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick question. Is there anything that the federal government can do to repeal the Stand Your Ground laws in these states, or is it something that each state has to dismantle themselves? And I'll hang up while you respond.
Thanks, Judy. I like those
short and to the point and very concise.
Yeah, except we don't like to use the word short so early Sunday mornings. 215-263.
I thought it was a very thoughtful question, though.
Yeah, 1003. Well, then go ahead, Mr. Thoughtful. This is your first, I'll give you your best shot here. Can the federal government repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law?
I don't think so. I mean, if it's a national law, it could be repealed by the federal government, but I think each state has to, because they enact their own laws. They create their own laws. I think they have to be the ones to repeal it. Now, having so much attention brought to it is what you need to do to stir the people up in those states that have that law, so that if it does show up on the ballot to repeal it, you're going to get some movement on it.
Well, okay, that's your take on it, and I respect that, but I don't know that I agree with it. I would say, in the one regard, you're probably correct that they can't outright repeal it. But what the federal government usually does in situations such as this, well, they could sue the state if they thought that the law was in violation of the United States Constitution, because ultimately that document is the law of the land, and every state has to comply with that. But you know, remember when states had their own speed limits, and some states were 60 and 65, and the federal government said, "Well, you can do that. We can't force you to be 55, but if you don't, we're not going to give you any more federal money." And that brought all the states into compliance pretty darn quickly. So in the one regard, you're correct. The federal government has the power to control the behavior of a state in other ways rather than outright demanding or having the authority to demand repealing the law. But some states like Florida and Texas that frequently are kind of on the periphery of normal, what we feel like, we, the normal people of America, feel like is normal behavior. I mean, Texas kills more people with the death penalty than any other country, in, I think, save one. And maybe like Pakistan might actually kill more people with the death penalty than Texas. And then there's Texas. I mean, so it doesn't take, it doesn't take a lot for certain states to just have very, you know, have a very strong conviction in a way that the other 49 don't join in. The federal government's going to look at Stand Your Ground, no doubt. I think it remains, though. That's my prediction in those states that still have it. Let's talk to Joey from Cherry Hill. Hey, Joey, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Yes, I was calling because I wanted to comment about the case. I was actually watching Pierce Morgan the other night, and I seen one notice that the jury was explaining how they, you know, came to the conclusion, and a bit of evidence that they used was Zimmerman's rendition of what happened. And as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, now, how could they possibly use this? And, you know, this is the man that's on trial for murder. Like, he could embellish, he could lie, and, you know, but, you know, they still allowed his story to weigh as evidence.
And, you know, you're saying that they probably tactically didn't make the right decision in doing that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the prosecutors made some bad decisions from the time of, like I said, from the time of charging, when they could have charged all the lesser offenses, but specifically chose not to, and then were caught back on their heels and had to start adding charges after the trial began, which didn't look good either. You know, we can Monday morning quarterback all we want, I suppose. Obviously, I believe that if they had charged with all the appropriate charges and handled the case a little bit differently, we wouldn't be talking about a not guilty. You know, one of those charges, at least in my mind, the negligent homicide would have stuck. And George would have done some time in prison, and people would have felt a lot more satisfaction in the process than they ultimately did. Joey, thanks for calling us from Cherry Hill, and have a great Sunday, sir.
Okay, you too.
I don't know, CP. Have you ever been involved in a case where the prosecutor screwed up by not charging right?
That happens all the time. And a lot of times they go for the, you know, whole pie, so to speak, when a few slices will do. And it's just a tool that they use, and I think they're getting better at it. But I understand the person in Florida who prosecuted the case has an affinity to do that type of thing, and it cost her.
Yeah, you know, because I suppose why do they do that?
Well, I think sometimes their mentality is, let's see how much we can throw up against the wall and something's going to have to stick. But unfortunately, when you go for the more dramatic murder conviction as opposed to a manslaughter, a lot of times that intent, once that intent is not proved, you lose it.
Yeah, I think prosecutors, certain prosecutors, are fearful that a jury will choose the lesser crime when given the opportunity, and they don't want to see that happen. They want to see stretch the facts and try to get the jury to feel compelled when there's nothing else that they can charge or convict the person of. They want the jury to feel compelled to have to stretch to the larger crime. It didn't work here. You know, how would you, I just can't imagine, folks, I don't know, how much pressure must have been on these six women to have convicted George Zimmerman, and they didn't do it. I mean, they had to know the rest of the world, or most of the rest of the world, wanted to see a conviction.
It's a good point, but, I believe that jurors are going to do the right thing. I've practiced a lot of homicide cases where I defended people, and I know when they go back there, you can't predict what they're going to do. And some of them, most of them, take it really, really seriously, and they dissect every little piece of evidence. And they don't think what everybody else wants. It's only what's in that jury room. It's only with that evidence they hear from that stand. They don't read newspapers. They don't take into account anybody else's point of view. They just listen to the evidence and they try their best.
Let's talk to Joseph from the state of Maryland. Good morning, Joseph, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
We're well, thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning. What's your comment on the Zimmerman matter?
Yes, sir. It was about how some of the trial went and how he was said to have been standing his ground. I understand the need for protection, and especially if you feel threatened. My point is that standing your ground should mean just that. You're standing there while someone is aggressively attacking you. But if you instigate an altercation and then follow someone, and then you get the worst end of the altercation, then you reach and get a gun and shoot them, can that still be considered standing your ground? It just seems that you know, he wasn't really defending himself so much as trying to prove a point, so to speak. And I'm just saying that I think that might not have been really definitive as standing your ground.
Well, let me say this. First off, I think that the jury's verdict screams loudly that the jury, anyway, after having heard the evidence, felt that he was engaging in self-defense, and that he, right or wrong, believed his life was threatened and that his behavior was in reaction to that threat. I think that's what the jury's verdict says. I, like you, believe that he engaged in behavior that led to that ultimate outcome, and that he should have been punished in some way for making bad decisions that led to that ultimate outcome. But here's the deal. The deal is that he could only have been charged with that if the prosecutor charged him, and they didn't. They didn't charge him with negligent homicide, which would have, or negligent manslaughter, which would have brought him before the court and before that jury on those. You know, they would have had to have wrestled with the very facts that you've raised. Thanks for calling Court Radio, all the way from the state of Maryland. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir. You too.
All right. CP, you want to say something?
Given the facts that the last caller just mentioned, that puts a different light on the story, and I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened. But if Zimmerman was the aggressor, you cannot be the aggressor and then fall back and say, I'm now defending myself. That's a different story. I don't know what happened in this case. But if the facts were as the last caller just said, that would certainly shed a different light, and maybe the jury would have found a different verdict.
Even if you start as the aggressor, but then the tables turn, and you're now defending, you're truly now defending for your life.
That's a different story again.
Yeah, but as somebody said, we weren't there, but what we have to rely upon is the jury's verdict. And clearly the jury's verdict screams self-defense. Let's talk to Manuel. Manuel from Winfield, good morning and welcome to Court Radio, and thanks for listening.
Well, good morning. I listen every Sunday, and it's good to be listening to you guys. I'm one of the organizers of a number of the rallies that have been taking place, and yesterday, with the National Action Network, we were in front of the federal courthouse. And one of the things we were calling for, I think, was legitimized by something you just said. You said nationally there was a time when we all had different speed limits. And then the federal government set down their mandate that, well, no, we want you all to drive. I guess that was when we were all driving 55. If you don't comply, we'll take away your federal dollars.
Right.
Everyone got in line because when you want to get someone's attention, you stick your hand in their pocket.
Thank you. Thank you.
I
made a career of doing that, Manuel. Go ahead.
and I hear you do it well. Which is why we don't believe calling for a boycott is such a ridiculous idea. We feel that if you pressure a state or the commodities of a state enough, eventually some of these owners are going to look up and go, okay, wait a second, what's going on? We just lost this amount of money in the last quarter. We're losing money in this quarter. So we're pointing at Tropicana orange juice and frozen concentrated orange juice products. Florida has three areas of major gross the three biggest exports in Florida: tourism, agriculture, and entertainment. So we're telling folks, we don't need to go to Disney World. We'll go to Disneyland in California, where there are other beaches and other parts of the country. And there are other cruise lines, which is one of their biggest exponents. So we don't think it's a bad idea. We believe that when these companies, these entities, begin to feel the pinch of the financial burden, they'll begin to look up and say, okay, wait a minute, we got to do something. Next thing you know, they'll be calling their legislators. And the legislators will say, well, what do you want us to do? Well, you better look at this daggone stand your ground law or something. That's why we're calling for a boycott, folks. We do believe that it'll be effective and that it will work. Justice at the end of the day is what we're all about. And I just wanted your thoughts on that. And lastly, some of us are starting to believe that the prosecution, maybe they were just that lousy, or was the fix in all around. That special prosecutor, who herself is a conservative, maybe she was in on it. But it just leaves a very, very bad taste in so many people's mouths. That's why you're seeing so many rallies, vigils, and boycotts, and you can just feel it in the people you look at. And it doesn't matter what race you are or what gender, what ethnicity, everyone feels that a true injustice was done last week. And we just feel that something has to be done. And rather than tear up places and loot and burn, this time, no reaction. This time you respond, and you think about what that response should be. In our mind, that response should be not letting up. That response should be keeping this thing on the table. And most importantly, that response should be boycotting Florida, and most importantly, Florida products. One of them being, locally, two restaurants that lots of people like to frequent are Red Lobster and Olive Garden. Well, they are owned by Darden Restaurants, which is based out of So that's where we are with that at this point. And I just hope people can stick to this and believe in this. If we want justice, we got to get people's attention. Now, say it again. You want to get attention, you stick your hand in their pocket.
Hey, Manuel, is there a website people can go to that is going to have some information about possibly the beginnings of this?
Yeah, how could people get on board with this?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
How could people get on board? Is there some place they can go on the web?
I would tell everybody if you to go to the National Action Network's website. Sign up, by the way, for the big march on Washington on August 24th. That's the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. It'll be a who's who and a plethora of people who will be there, old and new. But that'll also be the day where we all set the agenda for the next phase of what we believe will be an action that will bring about the changes needed in Florida. So that's the last thing I would say to anybody at this point right now. We're still setting up a lot of information situations. We're tweeting, we're hashtagging, we're getting it out to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're passing on the information. And
on short notice, you had 700 people at 6th and Market yesterday. I think that's pretty remarkable.
It looked more like for where we were standing. But it was packed. In that heat, it shows you just how serious this is to people. It was almost, well, it was 90-some-odd degrees in humidity. Folks might pass out, but no, they all feel so very strongly about this. And we all understand it. I think you guys understand it legally, too.
Listen, I'm fully in support of the economic crunch down on Florida. I'd throw Texas under the bus as well. I agree with you. If we can create that financial incentive or disincentive to their current behavior in Florida, I think it will make changes. I believe that the will of the people should be heard, and I'm going to get behind it. Okay, you hear it now, you hear it today. I will not enter the state of Florida again until the Stand Your Ground law has been repealed.
You know, I appreciate that, and I think a lot of the supporters of justice appreciate that. Just think about this for a second, folks. It's just real quick. Florida has been the site of a couple of decisions that have been a detriment to a lot of people, to a lot of communities, and even to the nation. When I think back to Rosewood, Florida, and the massacre of people in that town, and then fast forward to the year 2000, hanging chads in a stolen election, that affected the entire country. And now we're talking about this. Of course, there was Eliana Gonzalez. There have been a lot of situations where Florida's verdicts and Florida's issues have affected us all. Florida needs a comeuppance, and I think right now folks are feeling the same way, collectively. You know what? This law, this verdict, let's get on board with this, everybody. It's the right thing to do.
Agreed. Manuel, thanks for following Court Radio and participating.
Keep up the good work.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be back after our sponsors' announcements in 2 minutes.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
If you've been injured in an automobile accident, you know what matters. Being able to afford medical care, providing for your family while you're out of work, knowing your rights and getting just compensation. These things matter. That's why your attorney matters. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. If you've been injured in an auto or truck-related accident, My Philly Lawyer will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman, on Old School 100.3. Oh,
that's an explosion there. 215-263-1003. We're going to move from the state of Florida to something more local, but just as big a travesty. On the Roosevelt Boulevard this week, CP, we lost a young lady and her three of her children as they were crossing the Roosevelt Boulevard really close to Masher Street. It's an area I know well. I travel regularly, and it's the boulevard has become really a drag racing mecca. This young lady and her children were crossing the boulevard, they became the four out of the five deaths on the boulevard this year. It is one of the most dangerous roads in America for pedestrians. They became the victims of two men who were racing one another and who have been arrested and charged with their deaths. I know that from a professional standpoint, I represent people every year who have been injured on the Roosevelt Boulevard. In fact, just a week before this death, I represent a elderly woman who was crossing the boulevard at Friendship Street between Tyson and Cotman, and was likewise, as a pedestrian, struck and nearly killed by a car. Multiple fractures, medevaced by helicopter to Hospital University of Pennsylvania. A horrific accident. It doesn't stop. I don't know what needs to happen for people to take it a little bit slower on the boulevard. The speed limit's 40 miles an hour on the boulevard. I dare say that most people travel at 50, some at 60, some at 70. It does not give you the appropriate stopping distances to avoid people who are crossing.
This is a tragic, tragic incident and absolutely preventable. I mean, this poor woman and her children are crossing the street and no reason for her to think people would be drag racing down, and needless lives were ended. And it's just something that's...
When cars are traveling at 100 plus miles an hour and you see them in the distance, you mistakenly believe that they're traveling the speed limit, and you think based on other cars traveling the speed limit that you have the time to cross when they're traveling two and three times that distance. They're on you much, much quicker than you ever would have thought. And that's what happened here. There is only one reason this accident happened, and that's extraordinary speed on the part of these people who didn't care about anybody else besides themselves. 215-263-1003. What do you think about this accident? Is it an accident? Or was it something greater than an accident? A tragedy unfolded in the evening on the Roosevelt Boulevard, and a family and a neighborhood is devastated because of it. I see folks there every night now leaving teddy bears and candles, and the sole surviving member of that family is a five-year-old child. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Kim from Southwest Philly. Hey, Kim, welcome to Court Radio. We had some technical difficulties. Kim, if you want to give us a call back, we'll get you on. 215-263-1003. The Roosevelt Boulevard has really been ranked as one of the least safe roads in the United States.
Well, not only that, but then when you add in, this is an intentional act on the part of the drag racers. I mean, this goes beyond negligence. When you travel at that speed, trying to outrun somebody, it's very foreseeable that some tragedy is going to befall.
Yeah, I wonder. And then they put in new pedestrian walkways in the half blocks in between, like I said, in between Tyson and the Boulevard at Friendship, and the block before that, they've put, like, between Unruh and Tyson, they've put these pedestrian walkways, encouraging people to walk across the Boulevard in all different locations. I'm not sure that that's such a great idea, given the way people drive on the Boulevard. I'm not sure, and especially an elderly population that takes a long time to cross six lanes before they get to that center island. It seems like it's inviting catastrophe to me. I know that we're currently representing a number of people who have been injured on the Boulevard, and it's a dangerous, dangerous road. People need to slow down. 215-263-1003. All right, let's talk to G from Logan. G?
How you doing? I just wanted to comment on the woman that was deceased on the Boulevard.
Yes, sir.
Isn't it cameras at that area? I just wanted to say that... being as though it's cameras at that area, if you travel on the Boulevard, you should know, being as though it's cameras in that area, you shouldn't be going at traveling at that amount of speed anyway, just to beat the light. You're going to get a traffic ticket anyway because there's a camera there.
There are cameras at Front Street, I think. I'm not sure at Masher, but definitely at Front. These are license plate cameras. There's cameras everywhere. You know, I mean, I think the estimate is that from the time you wake up and leave your house in the morning until you come back at the end of the day, you're videoed no less than like 7 or 8 times anymore. So there's cameras everywhere. We live in a video society. If that were enough to change people's behavior, we wouldn't have any more crimes in Philadelphia because these knuckleheads are committing crimes and they're on video the entire time. Unfortunately, people aren't that smart. And these folks weren't looking to beat a light. These folks were looking to beat each other. And in the end, they killed a family. Thanks for giving us a call, G, and have a great Sunday. And thanks for listening to Court Radio.
Okay, thank you.
All right. You know, I don't know what else to say about this, but we need to slow down. And let's talk to Wakia from Logan. These are folks that are in the neighborhood. Wakia, welcome to Court Radio, dear.
Yes, hi. I'm calling from Logan.
Yes.
I'm calling about the Roosevelt Boulevard. It's a red light camera on Masher.
Yeah.
And when you ride past there, people just speed through there so they won't get a ticket. And the light only gave 4 seconds to pass, so I think that's the problem.
Well, that may be a problem. I don't know that that's the problem for that night. I think it goes without saying that there are folks, young kids, who are drag racing on the boulevard. They're posting, they're videoing these drag races with these cameras that are mounted on the car, and then they're posting them on websites. In fact, one of the websites that focused on the drag racing on the boulevard was taken down the very morning after. So again, I don't think we're going to see as time goes along, but I don't think that this was an incident where a car was trying to beat the light. I think this is an incident where, and the police are fairly comfortable and confident that this is an incident where these two cars, one that struck them and one that didn't, but he engaged the other in a drag race, and these two cars were tearing down the boulevard at excessively high speeds in a race. It had nothing to do with the light. But you bring up a good point. I wonder if we all acclimate to these lights with cameras, and we know we're coming up to one, and we know if we press the speed a little bit, we'll get through before the camera clicks and takes a picture of our license. So in some ways, do these video camera intersections encourage speeding? That's kind
yes,
of
they do.
Yeah, that's kind of the question. Thanks for giving us a call. Have a great Sunday.
You do the same thing.
All right, let's talk to Barbara from South Philly about the accident on the boulevard. Barbara, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I travel the boulevard at least 4 times a day, if not more. And one year, I think the cameras do encourage you to speed up because there's a countdown that you can see. It goes from like 10 to 1. So when you know you got to get through it by the time it gets down. But also, I think that they need to really start ticketing people that jaywalk on the boulevard. I mean, this could have been avoided if she just walked a half a block back and crossed at the light. There's too many people that jaywalk on the boulevard and try to beat the cars.
Okay. You know, another way to look at it is if you change the way you think, and instead of saying it encourages to speed you up, it could also encourage you to slow you down because you know it's there.
You do slow down, too. If you know it's on 3 or 2, you know you're not going to make that light, and you stop before you go through it. But then you have to worry about people rear-ending you at that light.
Well, then if
but
that
also,
happens,
like
then you
I
have
said,
to call Dean.
To me, the main thing is that too many people jaywalk on the boulevard, and we do have a jaywalking law in Philadelphia, and they should be ticketed for it because there's no reason for someone, you know, it's horrible that the family is dead, but there's no reason for someone with a baby coach and little ones to try to jaywalk in the middle of the boulevard at 10:30 at night when it's dark. It is hard to see people, and there are lights at both ends, so she should have taken the time to go back.
I'm not encouraging people to jaywalk, and I'm not excusing that. If the facts are proven, though, that these vehicles, they're charged and they're building a case. But if the facts are proven that these two drivers were traveling in excess of 100 miles an hour in a drag race, then I think the onus flips to them. Because jaywalking or not, listen, we all have experience on like measuring distance and speed of vehicles, you know, just
right. And that's what I'm saying. It has not been proven yet. We're all just assuming right now. So, you know, like I said, to me, all parties involved share some fault in this. So
absolutely.
We have to wait and see what comes out as far as the speed goes and things like that. But all parties have some negligent involvement in this.
I couldn't.
It's really sad that the family is dead, but it could have been avoided.
Well, it may have been avoided if these drag racers had taken their race to a drag racing course like ATCO, where you can do that safely. But I do agree with you. It seems like everybody shares some blame. Let's talk to James from Philly. Hey, James, welcome to Court Radio.
Yes, my name is James Bennett.
Yes, James Bennett.
Yes, I lost a brother on the boulevard on a motorcycle. I'm trying to figure out why can't it be signs posted just slow? Put signs on signs, slow, slow, slow. Like, I mean...
I couldn't agree more. If we all thought for a moment that the excessive speed we travel could take the life of another Philadelphian, if we keep that in the forefront of our mind as we're traveling around, I think people would slow down. There's times when I'm traveling too fast, and there are other times when, you know what, I slow down. I let people in. I give a fellow motorist an opportunity to merge. And it's, you know what? It's better to travel that way, less stressful. And I think we do need to start thinking about each other more in so many ways, but clearly in this way. I couldn't agree more with you, James. Thanks for giving us a call, and really sorry for your loss. Okay, let's talk to Reggie from Logan also. Hey, Reggie, welcome to Court Radio.
How you doing, guys? How you doing this morning?
Good, thanks. What happening?
I'd like to make a comment also on the accident that's on the boulevard. I grew up in Logan. I've been in that area now for like 40 years. So I'm very familiar with the boulevard. And the call of previously, the lady, when she said, as far as all parties had some responsibility as far as an accident, that tragic accident.
Yeah.
I can agree with her a little bit as far as the jaywalking cause. I take that boulevard every single day to come to work. I'm a correctional officer, and I take it every day right there at that intersection, Masher. So I'm very familiar with that. Even if the lady was jaywalking, and as you stated, if these guys, when it's proven, I believe Stevie Wonder can see that these guys were speeding. Now, what type of speed were they doing exactly? That's going to be determined. But if these guys were not speeding, and even if she was jaywalking, you still had time to react if she was crossing the boulevard with her children.
Oh, for sure. If you're traveling the speed limit, 40 miles an hour, I think there's more than enough time to react.
Right. It would have been avoidable.
There's estimates that she was thrown over 100 feet as a result of the impact. And that's a third of a football field. You don't get that kind of impact unless you're moving well faster than 40 miles an hour.
And that's a fact. And also, I don't know if you saw the story that the Daily News reported on. The gentleman who hit this person, and I say that in all respect, but not I say it in disrespect.
Yeah, also, not really, right.
He's not a gentleman. But he said he was only doing 40 to 40 miles an hour. It was dark. It was no lights. It's light there.
Yeah.
And yes, it's dark. But at the same time, it's lit well enough where you can see people crossing. So if this person was not doing what he was doing, regardless if that woman was jaywalking, regardless if the young lady and her family were jaywalking, if this guy was not speeding, regardless of what type of speed he was doing, it would have been avoidable. Because
you're absolutely right.
That's what a jaywalk.
If you have your car under control, this accident never happens.
And who, right. And ultimately, who needs to be the more responsible? The jaywalker or the person with a 2,000-pound potential weapon? Yeah. I mean, if you're traveling in a machine that could end other people's lives, then I think you have to be more responsible than anybody else.
You have a lethal weapon that you're actually controlling.
Absolutely.
That will.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, thanks for giving us a call and have a great Sunday. Thanks for listening to Court Radio.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Let's talk to Tyrese from Ambler. Tyrese, welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you. Since I've called, everyone's been stating on the jaywalking.
Yeah.
And that was the initial reason for my call. I'm not trying to condone, you know, people will speed, people will race. And we know this. And as you mentioned earlier, when you see a car speeding towards you, your depth perception is off because that's the whole physics problem right there. You're looking at distance times speed times the light. And I do believe that it's up to us as pedestrians to be 100% aware because we have as many distractions as the drivers, but somewhat less. You know, the drivers are focused on their radio. They're looking at other cars. And if you ever raced or speeded down the street, you know that you kind of go into tunnel vision when you're doing that. You're worried about the car on the beside you and your life. And I think that's what, you know, if we did go back to having more strict jaywalking laws around the city, as well as just automobile laws in general. I made a left turn from the right lane the other day, and nothing happened. Philadelphia driving situation is way out of control. It's been that way for years, and it's only going to continue to get worse.
You said you made a left turn from the right lane, correct?
Yeah, I've done this in the past just the other day.
Yeah, and you didn't get a ticket for doing that.
I didn't get a ticket.
And nobody got hurt.
The driver on the side of me actually gave me the right way to do it. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, if somebody's giving you the right way and you make that turn safely and nothing happens, then nothing happens. But it's what we're talking about. You know, again, we're talking about a crime in my mind. This isn't an accident. When you're traveling, it has to be proven. I'm going to, you know, give the caveat that let's not get callers flaming me for presuming facts not yet in evidence. But if it's proven that the driver's going in excess of 100 miles an hour when he hits her, that's not an accident. That's a crime.
This has to be in excess of the speed limit. It doesn't even have to be 100. If he's going 90, he's still wrong.
That's not in dispute. I mean, it's clear that he hit the lady.
But don't forget, it's a hot night. You have a woman with, what, 3 or 4 children with her?
Four children.
Trying to get home on a hot night, crossing the street. Maybe she could have used a little more better judgment and crossed at the light. But maybe that light was a half a block away or something. Maybe one of the kids had to go to use the potty. You know what I mean? She's crossing the street. It's still the responsibility of the driver.
We're not in real estate. We're not properly judging the distance and the speed of that car. And we don't know that car, like you said, it may appear that car is going 10 miles an hour. And the minute we step in the street, if he steps on the gas and starts going 15, he cuts our time off the cross.
And that's why Dean said it's the responsibility of the driver. That guy behind, that person behind the 2,000-pound deadly machine that can take your life in a second.
Right. I agree with you 100%.
Actually, 4,000 pounds, 4,500 pounds.
Every day.
Anyway, all right. Well, listen, I'm good.
You know, I just moved here from California recently, and in California, they have a strict law.
Oh, they do.
90 feet within the crosswalk, you will get ticketed for jaywalking.
Yeah, yeah. California's obsessive about that.
I'm not saying that the lady was jaywalking. I'm just saying this to contribute to the problem that we have a mentality that it's okay to run across the street in front of a car in Pennsylvania, and it's not.
Yeah.
You know, and the drivers think that we're so used to them people doing that as drivers that we think that we'll be able to compensate for them doing that. And in an accident, because they were wrong and we were wrong. Then it becomes an accident whether I was going fast or they were going slow. We both made a judgment that led us to being wrong, which was an accident. And it's only going to get worse and worse and worse.
I couldn't agree more. All right, thanks for giving us a call, and have a great Sunday. You know, we haven't even commented on, there was another incident with a vehicle in Philadelphia on Bustleton Avenue outside of a bar. There was a group of 8 or 9 young ladies in the parking lot outside of a bar that were mowed down by a car. 2 are in critical condition, and several are seriously injured. The vehicle can be used as a weapon, and we really, you know, it's no different than pointing a gun into a crowd and pulling the trigger, in my mind. You have to drive in a manner in which you protect those who are least protected.
I think it's worse than pointing a gun, because a car, you're going to see who you're going to hit.
Yeah.
You may miss with the gun.
Well, unfortunately, these two clowns didn't miss. Let's talk to Arnold from West Oak Lane. Arnold, welcome to Court Radio.
Yeah. I've listened to the comments. You know, I'm 65. I've had my license for a long time. But, you know, I didn't really learn how to drive until I drove a cab. I didn't know how to really know how to, I mean, basic driving, get a license. But to be out there on the street around people and other cars, my mindset totally changed around. And I realized that you have to drive for the other person and yourself. Driving down that boulevard at night, okay, at that type of speed, your reaction is not going to, be timely. By the time you see those people crossing the street, it's too late.
Yeah.
That's a good point, George. You know, defensive driving is always the best way to go. This way you're always on the lookout for something happening.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know what I mean? And the city is set up. Most of the time, especially that time of night, so that you can't catch those lights if you drive a certain speed. If you drive the speed limit, you'll catch those lights, one thing. But, of course, what was going on with that person, with his fast little car, total disregard for other human beings,
You're Arnold?
Yes.
Yeah. No, you're right. And if you're concentrating on timing those lights, you're not going to let little things like pedestrians bother you, because you're going to, you know, not make that light. And if you have that mindset, you're going to run into trouble every time.
Folks, if you're listening to Court Radio and you've been involved in an accident and need some representation, give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727. My Philly lawyer represents those who have been injured and killed in car accidents in and around Philadelphia each and every week. 215-227-2727. In the meantime, our time is up, Mr. Meraki, and I want to thank you for being our guest host.
It was my pleasure, Dean.
We're going to have you back again in the next couple of weeks, because Mr. Rappaport's running around not paying attention to his obligations. I'm gonna convince you to come back one more time at least. Folks, coming up right after these announcements will be my buddy E. Steven and Philly Speaks. Thanks, and have a great Sunday.
If your child suffered a birth injury, you know what matters. Getting proper medical care, counseling and assistance, knowing your rights, and getting just compensation to provide for your child's future matters. That's why your attorney matters. My Philly Lawyer is ready to fight relentlessly for you and your child. Call 215-227-2727. Choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting the compensation you deserve. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help.
Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
You need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.